Man, oh man. Y'all, our band is so good. They added mandolin tonight. Added a mandolin. Come on. I'm telling you, if you aren't signed up for the setup team, you need to, just so you can come in here and hear them play twice, because I get to hear them like play two or three times before you guys even get in here. So it's worth it just for that. And I think that's the first time we've done that song right before I got to talk, where I didn't walk up too early. Because that last, she says that last couple lines twice, and I always walk up partway through, and then she sings again, and then I have to turn back and walk back, because it looks like I'm coming up for a solo. So I'm feeling pretty good about everything right now. I'd like to start off by going through all 10 announcements again, if that's all right. No, I don't. Tonight we're actually looking at the second half of the verses that we started last week. So the way the lectionary texts roll out this time is, and I'm very glad about this, because I think there's so much in these verses. It's the story of Jesus' first sermon to his kind of home church, so to speak, in Luke 4. And so last week we talked the beginning part of these, and now we're going to talk about kind of the reaction of the people. And so just to remind you, I'm going to go ahead and read through just for context in case you weren't here last week. And if you weren't, you can always catch up via podcast. So we record all these on this very fancy $20 recording device, because we're high tech here and we're high class. But actually it comes out all right, apart from it's my voice. And you can get those anytime. You can go to the website and, you know, get the latest podcast, or go to Podbean, P-O-D-B-E-A-N is kind of the service we use, and find it there. So if you haven't listened to last week's, I encourage you to do that, but well, you can still, you don't have to leave. You can still catch up by listening through right now. So Luke 4 starts at verse 14, goes to 21. This is what we looked at last week. It says, Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through the whole countryside. He was teaching in their synagogue, and everyone praised him. He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read. And the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoner, recovery of sight to the blind, and to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. He then rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. He began by saying to them, Today the scripture is fulfilled in your hearing. And so we talked about this last week. This is a very important moment, right? It's Jesus' first sermon. It's when Jesus essentially makes his first kind of messianic claim to his hometown, right? He takes these scriptures, and he very specifically chooses a very, very particular portion of them, right? Remember, the very next line in Isaiah talks about the vengeance of the Lord, right? And Jesus leaves that part out. There's certain things he covers and certain things he doesn't. It's his claim to who he is and why he is here, right? And last week we talked about kind of wrestling with this idea, because if one of the things we did last week was ask everyone to write down if you were brought up in church or brought up in faith, what they told you, how you would answer the question of why did Jesus come, right? And then we had everyone write down how you would answer today if someone asked you, just a couple of sentences. And we took a couple minutes of that. We actually had homework in here last week. There's no homework this week. But then we basically asked ourselves, do any of our answers actually resemble what Jesus claims himself? When Jesus says, here's why I'm here. This is why I've been sent, right? And most of us admitted, no, they don't look much the same. And so then we kind of sat with that idea and tried to wrestle with why do our answers not look at all like Jesus? Which is not to say that anything else we talk about outside of these things is not true of Jesus, but if we don't include these things at all, that says something about what we're leaving out, and maybe we should think about why, right? And again, if you weren't here, you can tune in last week. And I think I just realized that I didn't actually edit out the silence when everyone was writing. So there's going to be a nice little 5-minute like song right in the middle of everything, which is, I just thought of that. That's sorry for all of you who tried to listen on podcast. Just participate. See, I did that. Actually, I left that in there so everyone would participate in the homework at home. I know what I'm doing, people. So we talked about that last week. And so you have this sermon where he quotes Isaiah, and then he kind of makes this messianic claim about himself. And so we wrestle with that idea. And we talked about how we often miss kind of a big portion of what Jesus was saying as to why he was there. Now, this first audience doesn't miss it at all. I mean, they hear exactly what he's saying. And at first, at least, until it was bad news, it was really good news to them, right? And so now we move into their response, and then kind of the exchange that happens when his hometown, people who have seen him, grown up with him, know who he is, hear his first sermon, hear his claim, why he's there. Verse 22 says this, all spoke well of him and were amazed at the gracious words that came from his lips. Isn't this Joseph's son? They asked, right? And so they love it, right? They're eating it up. This whole first thing he said, and his messianic claim, the words that he has, they're so gracious. This idea of setting the oppressed free and being there for the poor and healing the blind, all this is good news to them, right? This would be a great stopping point for Jesus' sermon because he's got everyone on board, right? Everyone's excited about it. Everyone thinks he's great. Everyone is so happy with this, right? He's spoken with authority. They're amazed at what he said. Suddenly, here's Jesus, right? This young man who grew up in their little town, and now he's someone important. Now he's someone special. Hometown kid is making good, right? Everyone's excited about it. I mean, this is the all-time making good, right? Messiah. It's not even like, you know, he went to the All-Star game for baseball. So, I mean, this is the Messiah that everyone's been waiting for generations, right? They can't believe. Is this actually Joseph's kid? Right? They are so excited about it. And you can understand that, right? When the hometown kid makes good, the whole town feels good about it, right? Because it's kind of everyone's victory, right? Brett Favre did not just win a Super Bowl for his team or himself or Green Bay. All of USM, all of Hattiesburg won a Super Bowl. And everyone's still kind of riding high on that a little bit, right? He's always going to be a celebrity here because he was the hometown kid that made good, right? They love him. They're amazed by him. They're excited at what this means for them. And Jesus would have been great if he had stopped right here. I'm going to go ahead and give you a little trick of the trade if you want it. If you ever decide to go and start trying to gather a crowd by preaching, there is a way to make everyone like your preaching. Well, not everyone, but almost everybody. Lots of people are actually very good at this. They've made lots of money on it. What you do is you don't ever get too specific. You always keep it semi-vague, and you always keep it positive, right? And then if you just do that, there's this magical thing that happens. There's a magical thing that all of us do, which is whenever someone leaves blank space, we fill it in ourselves, right? And what we tend to do is we fill it in with the stuff we want in there. And I'm telling you, this happens, even if you don't leave blanks, this happens. I can't tell you how many times I've like given a sermon and I'm like, I think I've really kind of hit home this point that Jesus makes or something very, you know, and it'll be about turn the other cheek. And then, you know, so I've talked about it for 30 minutes and really tried to drive this point home. And then I'll have someone come up and say, well, you know, hey, Mike, that was a good sermon. I appreciate it. I'm going to take that to heart. And the first thing I'm going to do Monday morning is walk over to my neighbor's house and tell him what a jerk he is. And if he wants to throw it down, I'm going to go for it. I'm like, whoa, what? No, that's not what I said at all. I mean, there are people who will come up to me and repeat back to me exactly the opposite of what I preached on and think that I endorsed that somehow in the talk, right? And I feel like I couldn't be more clear, but we like to hear what we like to hear, right? There's a great line in one of the old Simpsons episode where Marge is getting on Homer and she's like, you never listen to me, you never listen. He goes, I'd love a sandwich, right? Sarah could probably accuse me of the same things. And so it's that idea that like we kind of fill in what we want to hear, right? And so if you just kind of keep it vague and you keep it positive and you kind of put that out there, people are going to kind of fill in the rest and it's going to feel like good news and it's going to feel like freedom and it's going to feel like it's for them, right? This is a good way to gather a crowd. This is a good way to make people feel good about things. Everyone will fill in the blanks with their own thoughts and opinions, and when they fill in their own thoughts and opinions, that means you've now agreed with them. And there's nothing you can do to make someone like you more than just agree with them, right? If they agree with you, then they must be a good person. They must be smart and wonderful. So that's how you build a good crowd. You agree with them and you will be very loved. People fill in the blanks all the time and we do it all the time. At this point, Jesus has left enough space that everyone's filling in the blanks and they're thinking about what good news this is for them. And if he just would stop there, everything would be fine. But that is not how Jesus rolls. So he keeps talking. Verses 23 through 30. Jesus said to them, surely you will quote this proverb to me, physician, heal yourself. And you will tell me, do here in your hometown what we have heard you did in Capernaum. Truly I tell you, he continued, no prophet is accepted in his hometown. I assure you that there were many widows in Israel in Elijah's time, when the sky was shut for 3.5 years, and there was severe famine throughout the land. Yet Elijah was not sent to any of them, but to a widow in Zarephath, in the region of Sidon. And there were many in Israel with leprosy in the time of Elisha the prophet, yet not one of them was cleansed, only Naaman the Syrian. All the people in the synagogue were furious when they heard this. They got up, drove him out of the town, and took him to the brow of the hill on which the town was built in order to throw him off the cliff. Right? There's two ways to stone someone to death. You either bring the rock to the person or you bring the person to the rock. And this is more the bring the person to the rock form of stoning that they're going to do. To throw him off the cliff. But he walked right through the crowd and went on his way. But I still, I don't really know what that means, but it's a kind of, I really would love to see that kind of on film, like how that looks when he just kind of floats through the crowd that's trying to kill him, right? So you see, they loved him a second ago. And then he keeps talking and they literally want to kill him. They want to throw him off a cliff. How do you go from I am amazed, I am excited, here's the hometown kid made good, I couldn't be more happy about this, all the way to let's throw this guy off a cliff, who's with me? And everyone says, yeah, let's go. And they drag him out there to throw him off a cliff, right? Jesus turns the crowd against him really quickly. And this may be a bit of an oversimplification, but I can think of just really two easy steps he takes. And so that tonight is kind of the focus of our talk. This is the sermon I want to give tonight. This is what I want you to leave with. I want to give you the two quick, easy steps to have your religious friends throw you off a cliff. All right? So let's go with that and let's see how that works out for us. I know there's not a lot of cliffs in Hattiesburg, but you know, they'll make do. So again, let's think through this. Verse 23. Jesus said to them, surely you will quote this proverb to me, physician, heal yourself, and you will tell me, do here in your hometown what I have heard you did in Capernaum. Truly I tell you, he continued, no prophet is accepted in his hometown. So step one to have your religious friends throw you off a cliff. Step one is to pull back the curtain on everyone's sense of being special and exceptional. Surely you're going to quote to me, physician, heal yourself. Do here what you did other places. The kind of the context of what that really means is we get the first good stuff, right? Because we're the hometown. Like, start here. Start with us. Start with your own friends and family. Start in your own community. Let all the good things that are coming, let's start it here. Because, I mean, I've known you since you were here. We're friends, right? We're special. Jesus recognizes that everyone's excitement is based mostly on their assumption that they are the winners in this home, that they are somehow exceptional from everyone else. And before we judge them too much for it, understand that we all have this. This is hardwired into who we are. We all have this bias. We all think that we are somehow really, I mean, if we're honest, we know not to say it, but we actually think we're kind of a little more special than everyone else. If that's not true, explain to me Powerball and how that works. I mean, it just got up to like over $1 billion or something, right? And I've done this, and several of you have because we talked about it. Who developed a plan for what they're going to do when they won all that money at some point? Have y'all come up with a plan? I've got a really good plan for when I win my Powerball when it comes. And I've really thought through it. And the only reason I've really thought through it is because somewhere deep down inside of me, I think I'm the special one that's supposed to win that. I mean, I know I'm not supposed to say that, but really deep down someplace, I really think I'm that exceptional. Like, I've obviously those balls need to come to that certain order for me, right? I mean, that money's there for me. I would do wonderful things with it. I mean, I've got a great plan in place, right? I mean, we all have that sense. All of us, the entire world to some degree, is how everyone else is just a part player in the big story that is my life, right? I mean, honestly, and I don't know how to even not do that. I don't know if we can as humans get outside of that, but it is in the sense, it's just kind of who we are. We have that kind of built into who we are. And even if we don't think we're going to win, we even have that kind of sense in relation to other people, right? So let's pretend for some reason God messed up and didn't let you win the Powerball, but your parents did win. So your parents just got a couple $100 million or whatever it was. If your parents had just won the Powerball, you would be very excited. I mean, I'm sure on some level you'd be happy for them, but what you'd be mostly happy for is you, right? Because in relation, you're winning, right? If you're honest, you're mostly and you're happiest for yourself. The assumption would be that you are their special, lovely, amazing snowflake of a child, the only one like you in the world. You have that special relationship with them. Surely this windfall of money is going to trickle down in massive ways and mean great things for you, right? You would naturally assume that you are the first beneficiary of what they are bringing to the table, right? Because of the relationship you have, because you are special. So go ahead and kind of take that image and take that feeling and realize that the chosen ones, right, the Messiah's hometown, the people that are sitting in this synagogue, they are the children of the Powerball winner. They have this automatic sense of entitlement towards what Jesus is doing. They are not wealthy. They are not powerful or important. They are people owned by Rome and oppressed by Rome. They have been waiting for the Messiah to deliver Rome into their hands for generations. Surely all this good news for the poor, all this freedom for the prisoner, all this healing talk, all this stuff, surely all that is meant, if for no one else, it's at least meant for them. And Jesus starts with step one of how to get thrown off a cliff by telling them they aren't special. It's not all about you, right? You are not exceptional. Don't assume that the good news that I'm bringing is just for you or even starts with you. Don't walk around the world feeling like you are more loved, more important, more chosen than anyone else, right? Jesus pulls back the curtain on their kind of pervasive sense of being exceptional and special. People don't like that. That is step one to getting thrown off a cliff. And then Jesus launches straight into step two. This is a good 1-2 combination here. Verse 24. Truly I tell you, he continued, no prophet is accepted in his hometown. I assure you that there were many widows in Israel in Elijah's time when the sky was shut for 3.5 years, and there was a severe famine throughout the land. Yet Elijah was not sent to any of them, but a widow in Zarephath, in the region of Sidon. And there were many in Israel with leprosy at the time of Elisha the prophet, yet not one of them was cleansed, only Naaman the Syrian. All the people in the synagogue were furious when they heard this. They got up, drove him out of town, took him to the brow of the hill on which the town was built in order to throw him off the cliff. So step one is pull the curtain back on people's pervasive sense of being exceptional and special. Step two is talk about good things for the people that your audience hates the most. Talk about good things for the people that they hate the most. Now, this seems like a strange aside. As Jesus is telling the sermon, and then he kind of says, you know, I know you're going to tell me to say, physician, heal thyself, start in your hometown. And then he launches into these two stories. And this is a prime example of why I'm a big believer in, one, everyone actually reading their own Bibles and taking some time to do it. I don't really like those, I'm going to try and get through the entire Bible in a year kind of thing, because you end up just kind of trying to rush through things. And this is one of those, I mean, these two sections that we've talked about the last 2 weeks, you got to do some research to understand anything that's going on here, right? Because if you don't know what these stories are, this makes no sense. And these are not real well-known stories. I bet if we did a quiz around the room on these two stories, most people wouldn't do real well. I prepared for this week, and I'd probably only get a 50% or so. These are not real well-known stories, but they say something very specific. And we're running late on time, so I have actually the entire scriptures up here. I'm just going to give you the Mike Dixon revised versions on these. But it refers to two stories, one in 1 Kings and one in 2 Kings. The one in 1 Kings is a widow. And so you have this time of famine that is going on. Everyone is starving. And then you have Elijah, who is called to go into a foreign land by God. He goes into this foreign land, and there is this woman that is out gathering up sticks. And Elijah approaches her and asks her for some help, asks her for some water, asks her for something to eat. She tells him, I am gathering, I don't have anything. She's like, a little bit of flour, a little bit of oil. She says, I'm gathering up these sticks so I can go back to with me and my child. We can make some bread, we can eat it, and then die, she says. Right? It's the last of what I have. This is it. And Elijah asks her for the last of what she has. Right? And she gives it to him. And then what happens is she ends up with this unending bread bowl. First Olive Garden kind of situation here. Never-ending breadsticks. Like every time it should be gone, it keeps replenishing itself. And so she and her family are provided for throughout the famine. Other people are starving, and they have literally all the bread they can eat. They can't run out. So Jesus tells the story of this prophet of Israel going to a starving Gentile, not a Jew, not one of God's chosen people, a widow, a single mom, untouchable, outcast, not a hero, not someone the Jews would like. This Gentile woman shows some deep charity and character in giving the last of her food, and she, not an Israelite, not one of the chosen ones, not someone from a hometown, is given this kind of magic bread to keep her alive. And the next story he moves on to is a story of Elisha. There's Elijah and Elisha, two different people. 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 5 through 14 kind of get at it. And there's this man named Naaman who has leprosy. And he ends up going to Israel and asking the king to help him to be cured of leprosy. Elisha the prophet then goes to see him. And you got to understand that this Naaman is a commander of an army that defeated Israel. Now, he defeated Israel. The king that he defeated in Israel was a bad king. God didn't want him around anymore. God kind of used a foreign army to take him out. But this is someone who killed Jewish people. Right? He's a Gentile who's killed other Jews. And he's got leprosy. At this point in the story, all the Jews are going, good, this guy deserves some leprosy. Right? And instead of what Elijah does, Elisha then has him go and wash himself seven times in the Jordan, and he's cleansed. There's a lot more things that go on in that story, but essentially he has him healed. So Jesus mentions this story of Naaman. Naaman is a commander in the army of Israel's enemy, Syria. He helped conquer Israel, overthrow King Ahab. Naaman is a killer of Jews. He gets leprosy, which is very exciting to the Jews. And then God, through Elisha, heals him. So step one, reveal people, pull back the curtain on their own egocentric sense of exceptionalism. Step two, tell positive stories about God blessing the people that they hate the most. And this is one you can really try this week in your life. I'm telling you, it's a great social experiment. You need to try it. Especially if it's one of those people that you really don't care if they're not your friend anymore. Well, let's be honest, we all have them, right? The waiter hanging out with that person, and they say something, they make a joke, they get on a soapbox and start grandstanding about some issue, and they kind of show their cards for who they don't like. Maybe it's those Republicans or those Democrats, or maybe it's those fill in the blank, whatever it is. It's whatever culture or political party or a group of people that they don't like and that they get to blame for all the world's problems, right? You know how it works. You have Facebook. So when they go ahead and they let you in on what that is, whether they do it on purpose or an accident, whether they just don't care that you know, or they kind of just slips in and they say a couple things that, you know, sets off the alarms for you, go ahead and log that away. Put that back in their mind someplace and log that as the group of people they dislike the most. And then make a point every time you hang out with them from then on out to say nice things about that group of people. To talk about your friend who is a, to talk about how God blesses this person who is a, to talk about how great, how much better the world is now that because this kind of person is there. Go out of your way to talk positively about that person. Make a mental note of the hated person, political party, culture, religion, whatever it is, then casually weave into conversation all these stories praising those type of people. And then see how quickly you lose that friend. Right? Anyone else here hidden or unfriended someone already in this political season? I have. You know, people, they've just extolled the virtues of someone that I can't stand, and I said, oh, unfriend, sorry, I don't want to hear that anymore. Right? Well, it's not hard to do. We all do it. And Jesus does it in a major way here. First, he tells the people they're not first in line. They are not special or exceptional. They are no more, the grace of God is no more available to them than anyone else. And then he tells them glorying stories about people they don't like. It would be me getting up here and telling me that you're not special and then raving about, North Koreans and fundamentalist Muslims. Most of you would not leave here happy. If there was a cliff, you might throw me off of it. As it turns out, as we look at Jesus' first message here, as we hear the words he says, as we see how he pushes the envelope as soon as people start to like him, as it turns out, Jesus' good news can be pretty upsetting to those who feel entitled to it. Which makes sense, really, if you think about it. Right? Because in the end, the essential message of Christ is grace and unconditional love. And there's nothing I can do to warrant that. And there's nothing that's more exciting for me to receive. There's nothing I want to talk about more in regards to being a recipient of God's love, being loved by God, and being shown forgiveness and grace by God. I love talking about that for me. There's nothing I like more for me. Physician, heal thyself. End it there. Awesome. I'm good. But there is nothing more offensive and upsetting than the idea of that being offered to the people I dislike the most. That will throw me for a loop. It is both comforting and disturbing to the 10th degree. I am all for love and grace as long as it extended to me because I am special. I am God's snowflake. Of course it should come to me. Of course. But if it is extended to me because I am special, it is not grace and it is not unconditional. And in the end, it is not good news. It is what you can find anywhere, anytime. I believe that in Jesus' first sermon, he exposes to the world what is so life-altering about the good news. It is simultaneously the best thing that could happen and the most upsetting thing we can imagine. I have come to believe that truly sitting with the gospel of Jesus means existing in that discomfort, that it is good news not just for me, but for those I feel like are least deserving. If we can't sit in that discomfort, are we really talking about Jesus at all? I really believe that if you live your spiritual life convinced that God's love is unconditional, that God's hope and salvation and good news is first and foremost for those you dislike the most, then you are likely living your spiritual life the closest to God's heartbeat. The good news is the best, worst thing ever. It's a terrible way to gather a crowd. It's a good way to get thrown off a cliff. Last week, we tried to imagine what faith would look like if we included those things Jesus spoke of in his first sermon, the reasons why he came. If we really had that as part of our understanding of why God was sent into this world and maybe why we are sent into this world as well, if we really included that, what would that mean for us? This week, I want us to imagine how differently we would relate, how differently we would worship and categorize and love one another if we truly accepted the uncomfortable grace of God. What does it mean for us when Christ is for those we are most against? How do we live with that? What are the implications of that in our life? Can our understanding of Christ include the mission of Jesus himself, which he claims? Can we follow without needing to be exceptional? Can we love the mercy and grace and good news freely offered to those we like the least? In other words, will we follow Jesus? Or we just join the crowd and throw them off a cliff? Let's pray. Thank you so much for being here tonight. Again, if you're with us for the first time, we want to especially thank you for being here and welcome you here. If you want to be kept up to date with what goes on in Ecclesia, the best way to do that is to get us your email address and put it in that plastic box by the back door. Email is how we basically keep everyone up to date on everything. So you can put that in there and we'll add you to the email list. Or if you have any gifts for the ministries of this community, they can go in there as well, and we'll put them to good use. But just know that we are better off with you in the room. And I mean that every person that's in here, every voice that's added to the songs, every mind that's added to us wrestling with these deep ideas, we are better with you in the room. So please come back and know that we are better if you're here. Just a couple of announcements to remind you of. Don't forget about the Super Bowl party next week. Still come here. Bring a little extra food. If you want to do red beans or a gumbo, talk to us about that. This pink sheet right here, there's some of these left on the back. Those have all the different things that the Hawkins teachers are looking for in the supply drive. Don't forget to check out the new website. If you are interested in connecting with us on a deeper level, finding out about small groups, you know, that kind of stuff, the website is kind of that place where you can go to find out, you know, beginning information and all that and get in contact with us. So don't forget to do that. We have baby dedications the next couple weeks, so be around for that. February 27th is Ecclesia Retreat. Don't forget that if you want to do that photo opt-out form, that's back there as well, you can do. The Brooklyn's Care Package is going to be gathered up next week. The Science Fair is February 19th. And don't forget to check out the Booster Club Facebook page and consider giving to the Booster Club for the forensics team at Hasbrouck High as well. I missed one. Lacey May had something they're watching together. If gathered. Talk to Lacey May about that if you want to know more about if. Talk to her. So I think that's all the announcements. Again, thank you so much for being here. We hope we will see you again. And may we go into our weeks, may we enter back into our lives both severely comforted and disturbed by the good news of Christ. May we go and live into those things, and may we, for once, be disliked for the right reasons. May we go get thrown off of the right kind of cliff. Peace be with you. Have a great week.